Good morning. You've tuned in for North Idaho News of the Week. I'm Jack Peterson and joined as usual by Chris Bessler. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jack. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well.
It's kind of a gray day out there.
It is. Yeah. It's gray, but you know what? Woke up to snow on the ground.
There was a little skiff of snow around, yeah.
No, so. very pretty out there, and it was not rain, so I was happy with that. We're also here with the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader, Zach Hagedon. Good to see you this morning, Zach.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I
just heard you're doing well. You're doing fine.
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing fine, too.
Good. That's good. We're here to talk, as you might expect, about the news of the week, and I'll start by running down some of the big headlines, and we haven't had Zach in here for a little while, and you've had some interesting pieces, not just in this reader, but the last few weeks, too. So maybe we'll even dive back into the past, the recent past as well. But I'll start with what's going on this week. The county, in the big headline in the reader and in the B of a couple days ago, was that the county has settled with Dave Bowman, a private citizen, for the trespass case that the case, I guess, began in January 2024 when he was trespassed from the premises of the Bonner County of a ongoing county commissioners meeting. He sued the county, and the county has settled with him for $200,000, as well as the county read a statement at the most recent county commissioners meeting as well. Speaking of county news, the county planning department is hosting open houses on comp plan changes. I think there's 7 in total, maybe 6 upcoming and 1 in the past, and I can run down those dates before the show is over. The Idaho Department of Transportation has accelerated its timeline for replacing the famous Long Bridge south of town with has announced a new study that might accelerate that timeline from basically the middle of this century to sometime much sooner. Here in the city of Sandpoint, the James E. Russell Sports Center is opening to host a movie tonight, and I believe they are open for business on Monday. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. So that will actually be open to the public on Monday, the 16th of December. The school district, in school news, the Lake Pend Oreille School District has declared the vacancy for the Zone 4 seat that was held by Geraldine Lewis and is now accepting applications to fill her term until 2027. The applications are now open. The board will see what applicants it gets and determine from those candidates who appoint someone to fill that seat. In West Bonner County, in their school district, they will keep their junior high open for extracurricular activities, but it has been closed for school activity, or for, I guess, curricular activities for students during the day. It has been closed this whole school year, but they intend to keep it open and maintained for extracurriculars, you know, access to the gym and things like that. So they're not completely shuttering it and shutting off all the facilities to it. Down south of where we are anyway, the Idaho Department of Lands and the Trust for Public Lands have acquired an easement on 10,800 acres of Stimson Lumber Company timberland on the shore of Lake Pend Oreille, or some of it on the shore of Lake Pend Oreille, I guess, down near Bayview. The land will continue to be owned and used by the Stimson Lumber Company for timber, but the easement will prevent further development in the future of the land in some other capacity. And Karen Matei, candidate in the November elections, the past November elections, has been announced as the new chair of the Bonner County Democrats, replacing Linda Larson. So a new, not a new direction, then new leadership at the Bonner County Democrats here in town, and some local politics. That's what I have for headlines, and some I have some old news as well that we can circle back on. What did I miss, Chris?
You know what? You hit everything I had on my list.
Well, okay. Perfect. But should we?
I think the kind of the big story of the week, at least for me, I thought, was this $200,000 award to Dave Bowman by the county after he was trespassed about a year ago, I guess, or so. What do you know about that, Zach?
Well, a fair amount. I guess the basics of it are sort of what we just sort of ran through, right? I mean, he was asked to leave a Bonner County Commissioner business meeting due to what the former chairman, Luke Ahmet, considered to be sort of threatening emails. There had been, of course, back and forth between these people for months prior to the incident where he was trespassed. Anyone who watches these meetings knows that there's a very identifiable contingent of people, including Dave Bowman, who show up to most every one of these meetings on Tuesday mornings at the administration building and basically just kind of raise a ruckus. You know, they watchdog things. They also sort of criticize things. They, in the past, have insulted people. They've challenged people's legitimacy, you know, on the Board of Commissioners. They had clearly identifiable enemies in former Chair Luke Ahmet, who, of course, resigned his position after losing the May primary to Ron Korn just this past primary. So Ahmet stepped down in September. But, you know, it was sort of amid a lot of this controversy that has typified commissioner meetings for the past several years now. So long story short, I guess, long preamble short, Bowman had been emailing back and forth with various people at the county talking about how he was disappointed in, you know, asking him to leave, et cetera, et cetera. He made some comments in at least one email where he said he would have been justified in deploying offensive force or something, you know, to make sure that he wasn't ejected from a meeting. That was taken as a threatening statement. Commissioner Ahmet at the time trespassed him with a citizen's arrest, saying, like, you know, I've asked you to leave, like, you're not leaving, so I'm doing a citizen's arrest on you. The sheriff's office has been pretty clear in the past that they won't enforce trespassing orders on people in the commissioner meetings. So the Sandpoint Police ended up responding to this particular case. They took Mr. Bowman off the property, and shortly thereafter we heard there was a lawsuit alleging, you know, that his constitutional rights had been abridged and, you know, there'd been some kind of bodily physical harm. It sort of simmered away for a while. We knew that the case was ongoing. It was dismissed, and now the county has settled for, as you said, $200,000. And it's broken down into two chunks of money. It was $199,999 for the physical harm, and $1 for constitutional civil rights violations. We asked Mr. Bowman to describe what the physical, you know, what kind of harm he suffered during that, and he politely declined to comment. So we don't know exactly what physical harm he endured, but the county saw fit to, you know, settle for $200,000 and was required, I guess, by the settlement to read a statement at the most recent meeting, basically apologizing. And of course, Mr. Bowman and others spoke at the meeting sort of applauding the settlement, applauding the decision to dismiss, and then taking people to task for the fact that the incident ever even occurred. One of the things that came out, you know, was some anger that, you know, former Commissioner Ahmet wasn't suffering any consequences for this. You know, they wanted to see him personally sort of punished, but, you know, that clearly isn't going to happen based on what we've seen. It was a theatrical, politically theatrical episode, which has now ended in a pretty hefty payout from the civil litigation fund at the county. So that, I mean, this is tax dollars, right, being spent to resolve this issue. And, you know, hopefully this is the last time we have to go through something like this. But we'll see. I mean, the mood in these meetings is still pretty dicey and testy.
Yeah.
It's the same people showing up still. I mean, there's less rancor than we've seen, you know, since former Commissioner Ahmet stepped down. But, you know, they're still, you know, throwing arrows and barbs and whatnot at certain commissioners. Ron Korn has been on the wrong side of these people a couple times. You know, they don't like Steve Bradshaw at all. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he's still sort of persona non grata. But, yeah, it's just one more page in the grand tome of the drama of the Bonner County mm-hmm. commissioners.
The way that was split, the one, you know, all but $1 being in compensation for physical injuries and then a dollar for the violation of Bowman's constitutional civil rights. Is that standard practice? Is that something that happened? I mean, certainly caught my eye, but maybe that's standard practice. I'm not.
Well, really sure. I mean, I think settlements can be broken down into like certain amounts for certain things.
Right.
I think the dramatic breakdown of this mm-hmm. sort of indicates a lot about what it was, you know, it's pretty theatrical.
Yeah.
I mean, there's clearly a statement being made here. And I'm not sure if it was a tactic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not privy to what the lawyers were talking about. So, I mean, the idea of $199,999 for physical injuries, and we don't know what those were.
Yeah.
That could be just lawyerly tactics to say, like, well, we're going to have the best shot of getting the most money if we claim some kind of physical harm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the statement being, you know, $1 for constitutional rights. That's sort of like the cherry on top.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I mean, the case was about the constitutional violation, alleged constitutional mm-hmm. violation. I mean, that was the whole thing, you know, all along. And then to see the settlement split the other way so dramatically, I think it's probably, and I'm just speculating here, some kind of legal tactic mixed with a political statement.
Yeah. Were you surprised to see this come down, and were you surprised by the amount?
As an observer, I was not surprised to see that mm-hmm. the case was dismissed. I mean, there was another individual trespass at the same time, Rick Kramer.
Yep.
And their trespassing was sort of related. They were two individuals who are part of this crowd that show up and you know, are loud in their opposition to various things at these meetings. Rick Kramer was trespassed. He went through a similar issue where he sued. But then he went to the commissioners and said, look, I'll drop my suit if you lift this trespassing order. And they complied, and so he mm-hmm. dropped his suit. He didn't get anything, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
It was Dave Bowman who continued on with his case to this settlement here. So I wasn't surprised that the case was dismissed. I was surprised at the size of the settlement, and I was very surprised at how it was broken down.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the parties here are now the current Bonner County commissioners, right? I mean, Ahmet presumably didn't really have a say in whether this was settled or not.
I would imagine not. I mean, he was no longer a county commissioner as of, you know, sort of like early September.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how did the vote come out? I saw that Commissioner Williams said that she abstained on the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So that must mean, did Bradshaw and Ron Korn vote in favor of this?
They would have had to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I don't know why Commissioner Williams would have abstained. You know, she's not real communicative with us. And I don't know that she gave a detailed answer as to why she abstained in that meeting. But
mm-hmm.
it's just another, you know, it's the strange political fault lines that we have at the county level in action here. I think that the Dave Bowman, Rick Kramer, that contingent of people tends to side with Asia Williams on a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
which would have suggested to me, just speculating, why she would have voted in favor.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I would just be tilting at windmills if I tried to try to guess why she would abstain.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. But knowing that she abstained, that does mean, I guess, in particular, you know, Bradshaw voting in favor of,
well, I suppose kinda, two of them could abstain and one vote is could win. I'm not sure.
Interesting. So
this is being paid out of the county's civil litigation fund.
which is heavily used.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, the county underwent a thing just a couple of years ago where they paid out some large amount. And you might know better than I do, Zach, for the lawsuit that they brought against the city over the festival at Sandpoint, which, again, mm-hmm. didn't seem to really accomplish anything
right.
for the county. And that was a $200,000-$300,000.
If you took the total amount between what was spent by the city of Sandpoint and Bonner County yeah. On that case, it was in the $300,000.
Yeah. So the taxpayers now have footed $500,000 in civil litigation fees here.
For what are essentially political theatrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, to be fair to Mr. Bowman, he has said that this never would have happened if Luke Ahmet, as the commissioner, had just backed down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not necessarily trying to suggest here that Dave Bowman was trying to cash in. I think he was trying to make a statement. And even he, in his commentary at the meeting on the 11th, was, you know, this shouldn't have happened. And he sort of shamed the commissioners for spending taxpayer money on him, which is an interesting argument to make. It's like, you know, he just made, you know, $200,000, but he's also criticizing them for giving him $200,000. Because it shouldn't have gone there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, goes on to say there's malfeasance, misfeasance, cronyism, nepotism, all in the Bonner County government.
Yeah, the statements that were published in the Reader there are all of them pretty interesting. You know, spirited language, but private citizens and I don't know. They can say whatever they want, of course. They're not elected officials and, you know, just... But it was... obviously, there was a lot of feeling in the room.
There always is.
Yeah. Staying on the county for a moment, we pretty much covered this and put the story to bed, I want to say last week, just talking about Steve Bradshaw, the county commissioner in Zone 1.
Right.
But he had been for the previous month or so, involved in some political controversy as well, or at least he was the target of efforts to oust him from office.
Right.
You might say, or you know, to put it another way, he was alleged that he had basically already forfeited his office and they were moving to replace
due to a change of residency, which is something that the Bonner County Republican Central Committee was pursuing with the chairman, Scott Herndon, specifically.
Right. And we know that they nominated three people to fill that seat, sent it to the governor, and after a little back and forth, the governor's office declined to appoint anyone to that seat. Is that... That's pretty much the end of the story, as far as you know?
As far as I know. I mean, yeah. I didn't even know what they could do at this point. I mean,
yeah.
Bradshaw's no longer going to be a commissioner in January. So, yeah. I mean, the whole issue is moot, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think Lewis Marshall at one point said, you know, like, even if we did pursue this and it went to some kind of, like, litigation or some kind of, like, legal investigation, whatever you want to call it,
yeah,
it would take longer than the amount of time there is until Bradshaw's term's over anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, political theater... dominating the local politics.
Mm-hmm.
The governor's office, you know, they didn't necessarily decline to fill the vacancy. They just said they didn't have a vacancy.
Yeah.
So there was nothing to consider. Like
right.
They say we don't have a slate of replacements yeah. for a vacancy.
Because the
don't
commissioners have a themselves hadn't declared yeah, a vacancy. Right. And,
mm-hmm. and Bradshaw hadn't resigned.
And, like, and Bradshaw hadn't resigned.
I mean, if Bradshaw had said, I resign, you know, I'm living in Texas now, like I'm done, then mm-hmm. yeah, that whole process would have gone through. But he didn't, and if the commissioner just said, yeah, we say that Bradshaw's no longer a commissioner, then sure, that could have proceeded, but neither of those things happened, so the governor's office just sort of shrugged and said, you know, sorry, mm-hmm. there's nothing for us to do here.
Yeah.
And sort of reading between the lines, it was also suggested in one of the earlier emails from the governor's office, like, figure yourself out. like you tell us what's going on. We don't...
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So...
Your headline in this week's, your first, headline, at least on the, in terms of the page numbers, is in, is on the Idaho Department of Transportation, or Idaho Transportation Department, the possible Long Bridge replacement. So more work being done and considered on US 95, but this is that already. I mean, with the Sagal development is already kind of a big topic. Probably the biggest local transportation news, and now they're looking at moving up the timeline on Highway 95. What can you tell us about that? This is right now. It's just there's funding for a study.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, this kind of surprised me a little bit when I saw the news release from ITD. I guess that was on Wednesday, because everything we had heard for years really was that. The Long Bridge and the pedestrian bridge, the former Long Bridge that exists alongside it, were in need of repairs. Those repairs were being done in an effort to ensure that both those bridge spans could exist safely and functionally until their 100-year lifespan was up. Mm-hmm. And for the pedestrian bridge, that would have been 2056. And for the car bridge, that would have been 2081. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of where it was, is that, we'll do fixes, we'll do things here and there to shore things up and make it drivable and walkable and bikeable and whatever, but we're not going to tear anything down, we're not going to rebuild anything for, probably past my lifetime, I would imagine. I don't know if I'm going to be 101 years old. Mm-hmm. But, so that's where we thought it was. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, ITD's been undergoing this pretty big reconstruction of US 95 south of the Long Bridge. And then specifically that sort of lakeshore to Duffert stretch, where they're widening, they're adding sort of frontage roads, they're doing so interchanges, overpasses,
and they recently put in a stoplight
right
there, so it's changed the traffic flow.
So trying to sort of bring that stretch of US 95 into alignment with a lot of the other stretches of 95 that we see going south of town into sort of all the way to Coeur d'Alene, sort of the Athol area. I mean, I was told at one meeting, I forget, it was maybe last year. But I forget exactly when. But I was told at a meeting of some ITD officials that if I wanted to envision what that sort of US 95 Sagal corridor would look like, go to Athol and see that. Mm-hmm. So they've been doing that, and this is a completely separate project to anything they would do at the bridge. But as they've been doing the environmental reevaluations on the US 95 Lakeshore Duffert project, they've been doing a lot of community feedback and asking community members what they think needs to be done there, how it should be staged or process or whatever, anything and everything. And apparently one of the big themes of the commentary they got from folks was you can do whatever you want on this chunk of road from the Long Bridge to, Duffert, but it's not going to matter because everyone's going to get funneled into this two-lane, mm-hmm. two-mile, whatever long stretch of bridge. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have this massive bottleneck. And, the more lanes you add, city planners and community planners will tell you, the more vehicle lanes you add, the more vehicles you have. It's kind of counterintuitive. You think the more lanes you add, you would reduce vehicle traffic, but you really kind of don't. Mm-hmm. So envisioning this big, huge project, getting all these cars moving, and then just jamming them into two lanes didn't make sense to a lot of people. So ITD heard that the Long Bridge replacement was probably of a higher priority for the community than they had initially thought. So the board of ITD approved $200,000, which apparently is the number of the week.
Yeah.
$200,000 for a study,
yeah,
which is the very, very earliest stages you could ever have. So this is not to suggest, and they were very clear to me when I spoke with them, this is not to suggest that we're going to be tearing down the bridge in the next, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. I mean, who knows?
Lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what the timeline is actually going to be. But what it does indicate is that they are making it a higher priority than they had. And they're going to do this study to look at sort of the preferred alternatives. They already kind of have one in mind based on previous studies and feedback and stuff.
And what is that?
It would be getting rid of the pedestrian bridge altogether. So the old 1956 bridge would go away. And the vehicle bridge would be expanded into four lanes with a median and a sort of separate bike and pedestrian pathway. So, I mean, as it is now, I mean, it would be probably a little bit wider than both those bridges put together, mm-hmm. but in a single span. And so that seems to be sort of the rough thumbnail vision. But, you know, they're going to determine that through the course of the study, and it's going to require, you know, all kinds of public feedback and environmental review. And ultimately what they want to do with the study, once they've concluded it, and who knows when that's going to be, is leverage it to get grant money, because this is not cheap. I think the number I saw here was just for the northbound portion of that, which would be, I guess, two lanes plus the pedestrian bicycle lane. That would be a $225 million at least. Mm-hmm. So they're going to need a substantial amount of, and this is not going to come from state money. I'm sure it would have to be federal.
Involve that, And of course, building the bypass was really expensive,
right?
And the bypass, so it makes you wonder, you get to the end of the Long Bridge now going north. Let's say it's four lanes.
Right.
It's going to squeeze down again to two lanes for at least a portion of that bypass. So it seems like they'd have to do some work on the bypass that they just got done.
Building. Right. I mean, that would logically follow.
Yeah.
That might be the 2081 portion. Like, who knows? But this is kind of, I was surprised because this was something that they really shied away from, and they made a point of saying, like, we're not doing anything with the bridge for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're like, well, it'll be a long time, but probably not as long a time as we thought.
Okay.
What, and this is a question really for the ITD or a spokesperson for the ITD, but as far as you know, what's their big picture goal here? Or is there, these are improvements to US 95 to get traffic moving through the area so that we have, so freight is not as interrupted on its way to and from the Canadian border? Or in a lot of ways, Sandpoint is the largest town this far north in Idaho. To some extent, this is the end of the line. Right. People go up to Bonner's Ferry, but are we just trying to get cars moving as quickly as we can through Sagal and Sandpoint so they can get to their destination in Bonner's Ferry or further north? Or what are we trying to do with accelerating the traffic and moving cars faster and with fewer stops in Sandpoint and Sagal in this area?
Well, this is just 100% pure speculation on my part, although I did cover transportation for years down in Boise. So I have a
educated guess.
I have a pretty good idea of how ITD thinks on some of these things.
Uh-huh.
The US 95 project statewide has been a priority for ITD for at least 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to, I think, Dirk Kempthorne when he was the governor.
Yeah, it's the main north-south arterial that we have.
It connects. Yeah. It's an international. It connects us straight into Canada. You can drive all the way to Mexico on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has notoriously been bad for traffic. Mm-hmm. They used to call it Blood Alley back in the day when I was covering it down in Boise because of so many accidents. And it was two lanes for huge chunks.
Mm-hmm.
So they've spent the better part of probably two decades, maybe more, dumping $1 billion. Mm-hmm. The Garvey bonding issue was probably something like $1 billion, I remember, over the years, to do this piecemeal chunk by chunk by chunk. So I don't know that Sandpoint figures too heavily into the overall master plan of what US 95 is meant to be. In fact, Sandpoint might be a problem because we're going to be the choke point. If you have four lanes all the way from the Idaho border in the south to the Idaho border in the north, you can't do that in Sandpoint.
Yeah.
Coeur
d'Alene has got a pretty big choke point coming through Coeur d'Alene.
Right. But they have room for it. They have some space for like an even bigger bypass, potentially in the future. It would take a ton of money. But we've done our bypass. There's no more bypass that we can do. And expanding the current bypass to four lanes, I don't know how you do that without taking out, the Seasons or a huge chunk of City Beach or, the back part of that new hotel that we're talking about building.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
Not in our lifetimes or our listeners' lifetimes.
So, again, pure speculation. But I think the vision is to have that as a major four-lane highway that goes straight through the state, connecting, to Canada for freight. Yeah. And also, there's a major consideration for the population increase we've experienced.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It'd be something to follow up with, I guess.
There's years of stories there.
We have a lifetime ahead of us.
I think that's going to probably have to handle it for us because our 8:30 hour.
Someday we're going to have a slow news week, and I'd like to talk to Zach about you had a recent trip to your alma mater shortly after the election. Had an article at the back page of the Reader that I thought was pretty interesting, just about demographic changes and the politics of the state, kind of big picture ideas, but we can hold that because that's going to be a longer discussion. I think. Mm-hmm. Right. What were you going to say, Chris? What's your
point? I just wanted to say, we, aside from the fact that we're at mm-hmm. our time now, that remind folks, this is kind of our holiday celebration over the air that's going on this week. And we've been getting our hosts to be talking about their programs and our special programming that we do here. Tonight, Bob Aldrich and Terry Nobody are going to mm-hmm. get together at 8 o'clock for the Blues Hour. And there's also live music today at 4 p.m. with Mike Wagoner and Utah John. So keep it mm-hmm. right here, folks, and hear from some of our volunteer broadcasters on these great programs we put forth.
Yes, it's a fun time of year. It's fun to have a little exchange between the broadcasters as well. I think Scott's coming in at noon. Scott McLongstreet, who hosts the Radio Flyer. Somebody will be here at noon doing some live DJing.
Okay, so keep it right here to hear these folks and hear more from our broadcasters. And by the way, we are a community-supported radio station. If you would like to help support us this time of year, you can do that. Go to krfy.org, click on the donate button, or you could call in at 208-265-2992 and make a donation. We may or may not pick it up because we're not full-time mm-hmm. staff here. If we don't pick up the phone, leave a message and we'll call you back.
Absolutely. We had some phone calls yesterday we had some nice donations yesterday. I think I can announce that Celeste Grace, now that the news show is over, I can say Celeste Grace was the first person to donate more than $100 after I made the announcement after Carrie Logan proclaimed that she would be giving a certificate for the early permit for early hanging of Christmas lights. You can hang your Christmas lights before Thanksgiving. Celeste Grace, congratulations.
Isn't that a lifetime permit?
That's what she said.
Yeah.
That is
really kind of a bargain, but thanks a ton to Celeste.
Thank you very much, Celeste. And actually, she had some competition. A donation came in 4 seconds after Celeste's.
Oh man,
it was close.
Okay.
But Celeste's processed first.
We'll have to issue some permit for something else.
A consolation prize of some sort to the runner up. And as Chris just mentioned, yes, community. This is a community supported radio station. It's an entirely community supported radio station. We don't get any funding from NPR or from the Corporation for Public Tax.
Or from the County Civil Litigation Fund.
Not yet.
No, we're not. Yeah, this is not municipal. This is not county. This is entirely listener funded and are in local organizations and businesses that act as our underwriters. But we are a non-commercial entity that relies on your support. So if you like what we're doing here, if you like this kind of programming and want to see it continue, krfy.org is our website, and the donate button is pretty clearly marked right there at this time of this season of giving. Yeah. Okay, we're going to go, but Zach, what's coming up in the reader? Anything, any big announcements from your fine paper? What's the news next week?
The news next week? I heard from Mayor Jeremy Grimm that there's a very interesting agenda item coming up next week regarding the provision of water service to communities outside of Sandpoint city limits. Mm. So I'll be meeting with him on Monday to have a pre-meeting chat just to get an idea of what's going on there. So that could be...
That's kind of a big thing,
that
actually.
That will be a very big thing.
Communities, yeah.
Depending on what comes down next Wednesday. So expect
specifically Ponderay, right?
I didn't get a specific.
Yeah.
I just know communities outside the city details. Limits. So we'll
but
see.
Right now, Sandpoint does provide water.
There are various connections out there. So that'll be a big thing. We're doing our Christmas stuff, of course, because we'll be having an early deadline, a very early deadline on Christmas week.
And I'll throw out that there's a two-page spread in the middle of the reader that could be used for wrapping paper.
The whole paper can be used for wrapping paper. I wrap every present that I have ever given in the past 20 years in readers.
That's fidelity. Yeah.
Right.
That was my grandmother always used the Sunday funny pages, which were in color. So that was her.
But the center spread is specifically designed.
Beautiful. This one's blue. Last week was red. I've been saving them.
We'll have another one. We'll have, we'll probably have two more.
Blue snowflakes. It's very Christmassy. Yeah.
It is. Would you consider putting out like an extra large version of the reader for like maybe for next week? Could you double the size, like the height of it? I could use a little bit more.
A little more space.
You know, a little bit more space.
You may be on your own with that one. I don't know if the press would be real happy with that.
Scotch tape will get you a long way.
Maybe a fold out or something. Okay, fine. All right. Well, I guess with that, we shall continue with music unless there's anything else, folks. No? Okay. Otto's Eclectic Mix. Scott's going to be in here at noon spinning some tunes. And thank you for listening to North Idaho News of the Week.